Welcome to the Ultimate Farm Wife podcast. On this channel, we're going to be discussing all things marrying a farmer, moving to the land, and becoming integrated with a family farming operation. Whether you're moving to the farm for the first time, or whether you're moving back into a family farming operation, we discuss the ins and the outs of all of it. So let's jump into today's episode. Hi, and welcome to the farm. Today we're talking to Nicole about you've married a farmer, now what? Welcome, Nicole.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on your podcast today. I'm really honoured to be here. And that was, to be honest, my dad's question probably for me, the exact one. You married a farmer, now what? I've been telling him for the last, my entire life, I wasn't going to be a farmer. I wasn't going to be a farmer's wife. But yeah, that's exactly what I become. So my name's Nicole and I married my husband Brendan in 2018, and we moved to Australia in 2018 as well, 2 weeks after our wedding, and we started up share farming over here. We were chasing opportunities, but yeah, even though I grew up on a dairy farm and my dad has always been a dairy farmer, I was an avid non-dairy farmer. I was the one that told him I was going to be a vegan. I told him that this was wrong or that was wrong and that I was never going to be on the farm, and I went and studied law. I was only about 20 when I actually milked my first cow. So, but yeah, things all took a little bit of a change. I had an eating disorder, so then I had to step back from law school halfway through, and I came back to the farm and home. And I got approached by a feed company. They were like, hey, do you want to be a feed sales rep? Like, you're a farmer's daughter. You must know lots about dairy farming and feed. And I'm like, sure. I didn't even know, like, palm kernel is really big in New Zealand, like a really big feed byproduct. And even something, I think I've been in the role for like a few months by this stage. And I saw like some actual palm kernel one day and I was like, oh, what's that stuff? And they just look at me like, wait, what? Are you serious? But anyway, so no, I really enjoyed it and I really loved the role and everything. I just took it all. I really jumped right into it and I really enjoyed it. And I really loved, like, I guess when I grew up, I just always thought being a farmer meant you had to be farming, like, and not necessarily all the other roles that are in the agribusiness sector as well. And so that's why I really, really enjoyed that. So I started my agricultural science degree. So I did that through Massey. I was able to do that all extramurally, which I really liked, because by this stage I'm working full time and going back to a uni flat and living off 2 minute noodles wasn't that appealing. So that was the main reason I didn't go back to finish my law degree. And I started agricultural science. And then I also did a degree in sustainable nutrient management and started as a junior farm consultant before we moved over here. And yeah, once we moved here, everything, yeah, kept.
Wow, you've squeezed a lot in already.
Yeah, so once we moved over here, I started as, which was an absolutely amazing role I got. I started doing kind of HR, a little bit of operations, a little bit of all sorts, really, for a 20,000 cow farm operation in the MID. And it was amazing, the stuff I got to learn from the people I worked with and my boss. And then it was just like an absolute nosedive into everything. Everything that could go wrong or happen with work, say, immigration, general staff, operations to that scale. It was just like an absolute massive. Also, the opportunity there to learn so much and gain so many new skills was absolutely amazing, which then probably gave us a lot of confidence and then also expanding our business to scale.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you meet your now husband?
Yeah, so I actually met Brendan on Tinder. And he is he's 9 years older than me. He likes to say 8, but yeah, it's somewhere in the middle of those. We met on Tinder back in, I think it was 2016. And yeah, so then we moved over. Yeah, and well, pretty quickly, like, he had had a marriage separation and stuff like that. And we were wanting to expand, and it was quite limited, your growth opportunities in New Zealand. Land price was really, really high. Share milking roles were in really, really big demand. Like, say, if you applied for a shoe milking role, you'd be maybe one in 200 applicants. And there wasn't many shoe milking roles. Like, we wanted a larger scale one. A lot of them were more around your 200 to 300 cow farm. But we wanted like 500 plus to be able to get that cash flow to then be like, ultimately our goal was farm ownership. So we knew to achieve that, we needed to go into the larger scale share farming to be able to build the right equity. And those opportunities just weren't there. So that's why we decided to jump across the ditch. And Brendan actually had come over in early 2000s, I think. He'd gotten a scholarship. And they had done like a trip around Australia, going to check out different farms and farming systems. So they went right around the whole of Australia. And he did this with his dad. And they come to the MID. And Brendan and his dad were both like, this is a cool spot to farm. So it was Brendan's dad who moved over in 2006 first, and Brendan still stayed in New Zealand and started his share farming career there, but he'd always wanted to come here. So wooed me over with wineries. So we came here and visited and took me to all the local wineries and things, and it was just, yeah, I was like, oh, this is great. We can dairy farm in a place that has all this local, like, great food and wine. I'm sold.
Absolutely a winning point there.
But, no, yeah, it's been, like, I wouldn't ever say I've, like, milking cows isn't what I necessarily froth on or love as such. Like, I mean, definitely, like, we have, especially in that, and, like, I mean, I've done a little bit of it, but I'm not, yeah, I'm definitely probably going to be the first to say I'm not in the shed every day or anything like that. However, there are so many other jobs other than just milking cows. Like, I think that's often a big thing is, or some people can feel that way, that you're not a farmer because you're not milking the cows. When there's so much, especially now, the amount of legislation or increasing changes or just everything else that's involved, getting the right milk price, making sure you've got the right suppliers, getting the best price for your grain, having everyone on point for your staff and HR. There's so much more than just milking the cows. And it is a very, very large businesses too. Like, these are all multi-million dollar turning over enterprises. And somehow we expect the same person that's doing all the hands-on stuff then to be doing all the strategic and tactical. Like, it's pretty crazy.
Absolutely. So tell me about the logistics of jumping the ditch and moving to Australia.
Yep. So we literally came over with a couple of suitcases, some very dodgy suitcases too. Some of the stuff Brendan brought over, like cattle dehorners, like all sorts of random things that we're just trying to like do our 1 a.m. flights to hope that security doesn't look too closely at the random assortment of farming equipment that's in our suitcases. You know, I'm sure it would have been all fine, but I mean, might have just had quite a few questions asked. So it was, we came over, we had our, we worked very, very, like, work was our main thing and still is probably, like, it has been very, very much just very work-orientated. Brendan had two kids in New Zealand here to leave, like, behind, like, even though they come to see us every school holidays. So we get them for 10 days of the big holidays, and then we also get them for 4 weeks of, 4 weeks of the Christmas holidays, and then we get them for 10 days of all the other ones. And then we try and go back and forth as well. So, yeah, and, like, leaving family behind, like, it was a big move. So we were like, you go hard or you go home. So we came here, and, yeah, I was working full-time in that role for the 20,000 cow farm. We had started 40-60 share farming on Brendan's parents' farm, which was 700 cows. And we did that with only 1.5 labour units. So I would still come and work, like, before I went to work, and then after work doing herds and stuff and doing calves, Brendan would just go nonstop. And, yeah, so we ran, yeah, so that was how we were able to build a lot really fast because, yeah, for about 2 years there we were doing, yeah, 700 cows with only 1.5 full-time equivalent employed staff members.
Yeah.
So it was, and then we were also pretty, well, I'm going to say lucky. Like, yeah, I was lucky. Like, we came during the drought. It made you learn how to farm good fast in these conditions. And it also then meant we were able to, for our first cattle we brought, like our first 300 cows that we brought, we averaged at under a grand a head. So we are able to ride that equity growth in cattle. So that was able to help us a lot as well as we were continuing to grow. Because, yeah, we also grew quite quickly. So we went from our 700 cow, 40-60 share farm arrangement. So 40-60, we didn't own any cows at that stage, but we owned all machinery, and then we also supplied all staff, and then we had 40% of costs. After 1 year, we moved to 50-50, where we had 50% herd ownership, 50% of all costs, and we still had all machinery, all staff. Then in year two was when we got our first second farm. So I'd say that is always going to be if expanding or multiple enterprises is your goal, that's going to always be the hardest. That will always be your hardest point, is because for one, you've got to have the confidence in yourself that you can do it. And two, you've got to try and convince someone else you can also do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because, of course, yeah, trying to find a second share farm job, it's always, yeah, and like, yeah, obviously it will be staff, there's a lot more moving parts. However, there's also the fact that we're already doing one well, we can hopefully do two well. And, yeah, so we then had our second share farm position, so that was at a farm over in Hayfield and milking 500 cows. So that was in 2020, June 2020. We took on our second share farm on the 1st of June 2020, and our first son together, Jackson, was born on the 5th of June 2020, 4 weeks early. After my waters broke because I'd been milking that morning and I was getting the cows in, and the races were horrifically bumpy. And you always need to pee when you're pregnant. You always need to pee. I squatted to go pee, and it didn't stop. And I'm like, uh-oh. I drove myself to the hospital, and then they try and, like, get me a wheelchair, and I'm just like, I drove here. I think we're good.
Absolutely.
Oh, man, but that was, looking back, I need to, like, write a book or do an actual thing about that at some stage. Oh, it was just manic, like, just COVID, multiple farms, because, yeah, we had the two farms and... Yeah, then, like, yeah, the kids, because that was the other part, is we did this big growth. I'm milking 1,200 cows now. We just have our first son. It's the middle of COVID, so you have zero family help. You have all these other pressures going on. And then I accidentally fell pregnant with Cara 3 months later. So, yeah, currently I've got 2 3-year-olds for a few days.
Yeah.
So there's actually 11 months between them. So, yeah, it was just an absolutely crazy time. But it was, when you look back, hey, it's the stuff that just makes you strong. It's great stories. Like, I literally remember, yeah, like, feeding Jackson at, like, 6 weeks old. He was, like, in my front chat pack while I'm trying to, like, wrestle tube feeding newborn calves. And it's, like, 7 o'clock at night. And it was manic, because the thing with COVID is we always had a really big, like, and we do now again, now that borders are all open, like, backpackers would make up at least 50% of our workforce. So we're always like, oh, it's all good. Like, prior to COVID, backpackers were all our workforce prior to COVID. And we're like, oh, it's all good. Like, this has worked really great for us. And then all of a sudden COVID happens and we've just taken on the second share farm and we're like, uh-oh, where's our workforce? So then we made the switch to Filipinos workforce. So we do have, and which has been absolutely fantastic too. So we use a mixture. So so we've got a mixture. We have, at that stage, it was probably 50-50 Filipinos that we had sponsored, and then 50% Australian staff members. And then over the last couple of years, it's probably almost been 30-30-30. So Filipinos, Australians, and backpackers. And then now it's switched to a bit more backpackers. Now we've got the Berry Dairy, because that's really seasonal.
Before we jump into the Berry Dairy, can you tell me a little bit more about how you went about securing your Filipino-sponsored workforce when you came into that labour crisis during COVID? And then how does that look once the borders opened and then you got your backpackers? Like, where do you find the staff? How do you go about making sure you've got everyone you need to keep both share farms operating?
Yeah. Well, actually, at one point there was even three. But yeah, so we staff was our biggest thing. So prior to having Jackson, and like Kiakara and all that chaos, I knew that if we were going to do this successfully, staff is the number one ingredient that is going to make the operation successful. So it's not a quick fix, like immigration and sponsoring someone over. So that's already involved. As soon as borders started shutting and that kind of started happening, we already had sponsored one person, like we'd had one person, like Brennan had done a little bit of sponsorship back in the Philippines, back in New Zealand with his previous farm, and there was one person that he had wanted to sponsor over, so like into Australia to follow us over. So we'd already started the process for him, which was really good because that actually meant we're already kind of had a bit of a step in the door. And then once all this happened, I was like, okay, we need to sponsor a few more people. So we sponsored three people over. So the whole process takes at least 6 months. So it's just something you have to already think about before you get there. Finding a good agent, don't try and do it yourself. Like, it's just, you're spending all this money anyway. Like, you just need to spend a bit more, spend it on getting a good agent as well, rather than losing all that money anyway because you've done one thing wrong. So that was all good. And then we sponsored them over. At that stage, yeah, I think it was about $5,000.
What's the title of an agent? What do they do?
So an agent, so an immigration agent, so they basically will take care of all the paperwork. They'll tell you what exactly, who you can sponsor, what qualifications they need. Say if your first step, if you wanted to sponsor someone, would be to find an immigration agent. So a good immigration agent. We use Global Skills, GSES is their name. I can't remember what the abbreviation stands for, but there is a few definitely around there. And then you want to find a good immigration agent first. Sometimes they'll already have people on their books, like they'll have like some CVs of some people that you can do interviews. Otherwise, the best thing I've found is to ask people that have already been on our workforce. So for once we had someone with us, like a Filipino staff member, we'd ask them if they had any friends or family back home that they wanted to, because then it also helps creating a community and stuff for them as well, and making sure all like personalities and things are right fits, especially if you're going to be expecting them to share a house and things like that as well. So, yeah, basically get your CV. What the immigration agents will do is they'll go through that CV and check, like, if they've got the right skills and qualifications needed to come over on the visas that are available, and then start the process of making you a sponsored, like, so that you, I think that might be about $2,500-$3,000, and it's like a one-off thing, like, so that you can actually sponsor people. What we've also now done is we spent an extra, it was about $5,000, and we have a dairy, and that's one of the hard things, like whether or not I need it now that backpackers are all, like it's readily available and we're in a much different job market now, but hey, I started that back in 2021 because that took quite a while, that took about a year to do, but I've got a dairy industry labour agreement, so basically that's an agreement between essentially us and the government, and that means we can sponsor people with less experience. So they only need a minimum of 1 year dairy experience. So that means when we have like really great backpackers sometimes, which has happened in the past, and they want to stay, by the time they've done their 6 months and some 88 days, like they can piece together experience pretty quick. And same with sponsoring other people, because otherwise they need to have a qualification, which is quite a big hurdling point. So, yeah, that means that we've got a lot lower basis level, and it's also a lot faster as well, because essentially we've been pre-approved then to sponsor people with X experience. So I think we've got 2 a year that we can do for up to 5 years.
Awesome. That takes some pressure off.
No, it does. And then, backpackers, I find, so Facebook, literally that's all I do, like Backpacker Jobs Australia. But making sure you actually treat it like a job interview, like a proper process. So I've already got PDF documents that I did that do a big spiel about our area, the full description of the job, all the benefits, plants and everything like that. I've even got a little video I have got, which is what I normally do when I post. I'll have my little video of showing the farm and the accommodation and some of the staff members, and then I'll have a proper write-up. And then when they interview, I'll actually do Zoom interviews like this, so face ones as well, and I'll have my interview template and make sure it's then for everyone setting up the expectation that this is like a proper job, and then you actually then you attract a lot higher of a candidate as well. So we generally like to target people with previous ag backgrounds, but even though that's not necessarily essential, we've had great people that haven't had ag backgrounds. But yeah, it definitely can help. And yeah, the Irish are definitely some of our favourites.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned earlier, Nicole, at one point you had three farms. So what did that look like? Three farms, two kids, and then when did the Berry Dairy come to fruition from that?
Yeah, so well, what happened there was we had, so this was May 2022. So we had, so basically Brendan's parents' farm, because lots of people just kind of assume that the farm we purchased is the family farm or that we purchased into the family farm. But no, the family farm, there's three brothers and every brother's kind of had their turn either managing, share farming or like having their kind of step through the farm as well. So yeah, Brendan's older, middle brother was first. We were in the middle, so we had 4 years. So you had like an end date as well when his youngest brother was coming back to the farm. So we were trying to find a farm to purchase prior to that end date. So that, and we did, we had a private sale agreement for this farm that we now, that we're on now, where we're milking 600 cows that we own. We still had our other share farm, and the expiry for that was the end of 2023. So it still had one season left. And then we had this amazing opportunity had come up, and we applied for it because there was a lease farm close by that was 500 cows. And we knew the other share farm was likely going to come to an end too after that 2023. And we still wanted to keep some scale, but not necessarily that scale. But so, yeah, we didn't want to lose out on that opportunity. So we applied for it. We were able to get that other lease farm as well. So for the year, the 2022-23 season, we had our 500 cow at that stage farm that we owned that we just took over on the 1st of May. Then 2 months later, on 1st of July, we took on the 500 cow lease farm. And then we still had the 500 cow share farm that was in its last season of its contract. So, yeah, we're milking around 1,600 cows at our peak there.
What was the biggest hurdle of that? Was it still labour or was it trying to spread yourself across the businesses? Did you end up having like one labour force and one day they'd be on this place and one day they'd be on that place? Or was every place have their own staff?
The labour was good. No, I'd be pretty happy with labour. We had a really, really good team around us, and I always knew that when we were going to expand, that was our key. And so creating a really good team around us was absolutely key. It was more the spreading yourself everywhere, because even though we definitely did have the labour, they were still, like, two of them were completely brand new farms. Like, you're having to learn everything. You're having to fix things. You're having, like, it's, like, you don't, like, you're just getting through, you're still learning the ropes yourself. And, yeah, just spreading yourself out, because we do still, for calving and stuff like that, when you're just calving down that many cows and things, even though you've got good labour, me and Brendan still had to be there and everywhere. We still have very high standards that we wanted things to be done to. And it was definitely spreading yourself out a lot. Organisation stuff, though, in labour wasn't that bad. We had a good core team, and we had our core team on each farm, essentially, and then you'd just have some floaters that would go between. It wasn't to be, I don't actually think operating three was that much harder than operating two. And Brendan's actually probably said this like the same. That's the way we had it all operating anyway. So we would only carve down on two farms. So that was something we did. So rather than having all your farms stretched across, like all your key labour unit, like your highly skilled labour units stretched across three farms. We just had calving down on two farms, and then the third farm, cows would just go there once they were out of their colostrum period and they wouldn't have any calves or anything there. So it's not like you're trying to run around three places calving stuff. So that was a really important thing that we did. I wouldn't have brought it right back down to one, because I think two was still really good for just spreading out your calves, having different calving facilities, reducing bugs, all that kind of thing. And yeah, and then having two kids, that was like, at this stage they were one and two, and I feel that's like the key sickness prone time as well. Like, it just seems like they are constantly sick and everything else. But we were also very lucky. What we did then, we would not have been able to do, like, even looking back at our journey and our growth and what we did, it's so crazy to think that we did that only 2 years ago. That would not even remotely be feasible right now. The amount that our economy and everything has just changed. I mean, we're getting $300 to $400 for a beef calf, like, at 5 days old. You had interest rates that were like 2.5%. Funding and finance just was really easily available everywhere because it didn't cost anyone anything because the OCR was so low. Exports were massive. That would have, like, that was an absolutely massive part of our business. So that would probably have added on in kg of milk salt, like easily $1 to $2 into our income stream. We really heavily utilized export heifers because we could do an export heifer, and then Brendan could go and buy, if we sold one export heifer, Brendan could buy two in calf and in milk cows, kind of thing. Like, it was a way to increase your herd very rapidly. So yeah, it is very, very crazy to think at how quickly that has all changed. And the last 12 months has been very, very, very stressful, very challenging, because, yeah, of course, export market crashed completely, which everyone knew it was going to come to an end at some stage. But yeah, I don't think anyone quite predicted it completely crashing the way it did. And yeah, interest rates have definitely probably gone a lot higher, a lot faster than, of course, everyone predicted back then as well. But yeah, I definitely do acknowledge, like, that even though it was only a couple of years ago, what we did then would be very, very hard for someone to now do.
Yeah. Drivers around diversification of going purely from milk, like dairy and milking, to also having the berry dairy.
Yeah, definitely. So we wanted to provide, yeah, some diversification to, yeah, just have something, another income stream, and also something, I guess, different as well. I really like the idea of creating something completely from scratch has been amazing. And the amount of different skills you utilize and learn, again, because I love learning and growing and developing, and yeah, that was what I really, really loved, like the amount of different hats you'd wear. Like, we literally, like, I mean, I did that whole process myself in terms of permits, council, everything, design, like building a licensed cafe in your front paddock. Like, that, the amount of, you know, it was awesome. It was an absolutely awesome experience. And even now, the business and growing it is amazing. My hope, and it is, like, the biggest, like, thing that's come out of it is that people just want to know where their food comes from. That's our biggest driver. People love coming to pick the berries and knowing that they're grown there and that's where they're directly coming from. And even, like, meat and dairy, like, there's a real keen interest for people wanting our meat and dairy products to be able to buy directly through there. So that would be... that's the other part of the berry dairy, is that it's a bit of a long-term, by long-term I'd probably say 5 years, game plan, is that I think the environment in which we produce food is really changing. People, we need it. We've got a social license to farm. There's a big driver and market for people buying direct off farmer and knowing where their food comes from. So that ultimately as well, the berry dairy, I see securing us a more stable price and structure and longevity for our dairy farm business as well, by being able to sell eventually our milk through there or milk products through there, and also our dairy beef products as well, to be on track to be Bobby Dupree.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Nicole, in summary, what is your farm set up now? And so you've got, is it the one farm and the berry dairy, or what's it look like?
So, well, what we did was when we exited the share farm, we brought the next door neighbours. I don't know how we even did that. Why? No. It was like you just had to. It was one of those, like, we're in quite a landlocked probably farm in a way. Like, it's a really, really great area that we purchased, and everyone's been on their farms for generations and generations, which is really great too. That obviously means it's great farming land. But yeah, the next door neighbours, we had the opportunity to purchase 6 months after taking on that, like, this was in like the end of 2022. So yeah, we made that happen, and yeah, so that increased our milking platform here. So that means we're able to milk 600 cows here. But the next door neighbours we purchased, it was a dairy farm, but it had one trough, like no fences. It was an organic dairy farm. So like you drive through and you're like, thistles and weeds would be as high as like your roof of your car. Well, actually, you couldn't get over it with a car. You had to go by a two-wheeler. Yeah, it was black bear. It was just chaos. But so we've actually now got that pretty much into, yeah, we've subdivided that now into about 20 paddocks. We've now got water troughs in each paddock. It's essentially no, like, I mean, there's still some weeds, but very minimal. Not like, you know, it's like pasture. Like the whole thing's been drilled recently. Like, had an irrigator on, like it's been a massive 18 months. We did that to incorporate into this block farm here. So now the farm we own milks 600 cows and is 150 hectares. And then we've also got the lease farm still over in Denison. That's 10 minutes away. And so we milk 500 cows still over there
yeah,
on 130 hectares. And then we've got the berry dairy that opened on the 1st of November. It's just now closed for its season, but we had over 26,000 visitors.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Congratulations.
Thanks. Whether or not it actually, it can be a funny one too, like the different ventures, because obviously dairy farming can be quite high turnover and high, like, you know, you've got your quite good profit, good asset building, like, you know, just farming in general. So it's been a little bit of a mental challenge, definitely, especially the last 12 months. Starting the berry dairy when I did, because I probably shouldn't have. Like, it took, like, the berry dairy was completely out of cash flow and stuff as well. And then we actually got hit by 3 floods this season. So the farm went underwater, like, about 75% of it went underwater 3 times. The last one in December killed pretty much all of our grass. So all the grass that we just drilled in like 6 months earlier was all dead. So all we had was some shit summer grass. So right now it's the middle of winter and we're only just like growing grass again, because yeah, it was massive. Like the loss, it was pretty big. Like, and it was a funny set of floods too, because just some floods, especially on rivers and stuff, got hit a lot harder than others. So some farms in the area had like the best season ever, whereas other farms got nailed. So it's a bit of a funny one, whereas sometimes, like, generally when disasters or something happens, like, everyone's in the same boat, whereas it wasn't quite like that this season. Yeah, so that was definitely, yeah, been pretty average. But it's still, like, what we achieved, though, and what we created, we're definitely really proud of it, and we see a lot of opportunities for it going forward. And even just some of the things like school groups. We've had over 12 school groups come through, ranging through from like secondary right down through to like 3's kinder. We have lots of disability groups coming through, lots of elderly groups coming through. And just on a weekend when you go out there and it's packed and there's families and there's kids and everyone's running around and enjoying being outside and on a farm and being like, oh my god, there's a sheep, oh my god, there's a goat, like, oh, there's a tractor, like, it's cool, like, because you need to have those experiences for people to connect them to ag, otherwise they're not going to appreciate it, and then they're not going to care about it, and we'll lose it.
Yeah, absolutely. earlier in the interview when you were speaking about drought and how you were able to leverage, you know, the lower cow price and sort of things to help you stock up on the business. When it came to the drought, what was the biggest learning curve that you took? Did you need to resow your grasses? What about the strawberries? Like, what happened there? And was there any positives that you can take forward into the your next flood planning for the property?
Yep. So flood planning or drought?
Flood planning. Sorry.
Oh, flood planning. Yeah. It's cool. So flood planning. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, because that's probably more of a concern for us than necessarily drought, because drought we do have. Well, I mean, drought is still, of course, because we are very exposed in terms of the only, we've got quite a small irrigated platform. So the irrigated platform, we've got a good water right, and that's fine. And we've been working on, that's been a massive project, or like a massive emphasis for us, is improving. Basically, the three things we did were, our key emphasis was, first of all, was paddocks. So essentially, we purchased 150 hectares with 21 paddocks. Because, yeah, 60 hectares was one paddock. And then even the dairy farm we had purchased was quite poorly subdivided. There was only about 20. So we've now got about 60 paddocks. Because in a rotational pasture-based system, you want to avoid your back grazing and create that, like, being able to move cows, like, that's massive. Like, making sure you've got the right paddock subdivision is massive. So that was a big focus. And then improving irrigation. So that's why we put on... we had to do quite a bit of work to the existing irrigators that were already here, and then we also installed the other new irrigator that does about 12 hectares. And then we also, at some stage when cash flow allows, I don't know when that will be, but we've got probably another 12 hectares that needs to be redone as well. But that was massive, making sure we could utilise every drop of water, and we have some bores, so did some bore work and stuff there as well to get all those on point. And then the next, and then we wanted to make sure we built a feed wedge in front of us. So that's something we put a heavy wedge on, feed wedge in front of us with silage. So that's something we did as well this year. So we have now got the most feed we've ever had on hand as well to go forward into next season. So yeah, we want to make sure the farm was subdivided properly for optimal pasture growth, that we had maximum water and utilising our water as much as we could, and that we had a feed wedge so we didn't have to sacrifice production or cow condition or anything like that. And if something did happen, essentially we'd have a year's feed under our belt. So if prices did absolutely skyrocket, we could ride a bit of a wave rather than having to be purchasing at that top bracket. And in terms of the grass as well, so my husband does, he's a fan of drilling. So because we have very high stocking rates, we stock 5 cows to the hectare, we can do quite a bit of pasture damage. So we every year we do the whole farm, gets done in Italians. So rather than annuals, because the Italians have quite a bit longer longevity, like through, even they technically will last 2 years, but even just in the year, the first year, your annuals will pretty much die out over summer, whereas your Italians will keep going through. So, and in terms of really flood preparation, though, there wasn't a hell of a lot you could change, because unfortunately with floods, like drought, you can prepare and make a plan and get drought, like you can get your feed on hand, you can make sure you've got water on hand. Floods, there's not really much you can do. Other than, I guess, also making sure you've got surplus feed on hand. The strawberries, yeah, they went all underwater, so we have built that area all up. So we've built that area up a lot higher with more dirt and things, and we've made our mounds higher, and we're really happy with how that's all looking. But yeah, the dairy farm itself, yeah, there's not. And then all the fences and stuff that we did all held up really good. Like, I mean, you can't go putting around 8-wire fences everywhere when you're in floodplain zone. Maybe, and we've just finished redoing like some laneways and stuff, and that all got washed out. Maybe that's why, like, laneways and things generally don't look too flash in flood prone farms. You kind of just give up. But, yeah, it was, hey, it's one of those things, the bonuses, like, it was just a really average season, and the fact that we had 3 in a row, that was the gnarly part. Like, having the one flood would have been absolutely fine. Like, we're happy as the first time. Like, at least it was better than a drought. And the second one, even, it was just that it stayed. So, essentially, all of December, you're waterlogged, which then killed everything. So, but it is a big thing that's happening, and something that we are looking into is if all these that are meant to be 1 in 10 years events start happening 1 in every 3 years or 5 years or whatever, changing our farming system, like, is being as highly stocked as we are the best approach, all those kind of factors. But we are really open to change, and we're not necessarily just set in doing one thing the same way. Like, that's like me and Brendan have always done. We're not necessarily dead set on our cows have to be pristinely bred Jerseys, or we have to be doing this, or we have to be strictly that. Like, it's whatever is the thing that is the most profitable and efficient way to farm. And I think as times change and you've got factors such as your climate, your social license, things also have to change how you've got to farm.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that sort of brings us towards the end of today's interview. Is there anything else that you would like to add to those listeners who have married farmers and moving to land for the first time? What's your best advice for them?
Oh, geez.
What would you do again?
I think a big thing, my actual biggest advice would be more on the personal side of it, is you're going to have to change your expectations. Like, don't get upset. Your husband's not going to be there at every Saturday netball game. He's not going to be home every night for dinner at 6 o'clock. That's just not the lifestyle you've signed up for. But you've got lots of other great benefits that will come. And in general, farming is a great, like, wealth building, like, asset creation. Like, there's focus on your positives. Don't get hung up on your negatives, because otherwise, I know well and truly Brendan's probably never going to be home for dinner, but he's also a very, like, late and sometimes unorganized person. So I think probably no matter his career choice, he'd probably never be home on time for dinner. But I mean, yeah, it's just one of those things. I think that is probably, from talking to other people, like, I guess I didn't probably struggle with it as much because I grew up with it as well. I think that can be one of the biggest struggling points is, yeah, like, that farming isn't a 9-to-5 Monday to Friday job. And yeah, I probably don't have necessarily the best advice on how to change that. You can't really change that. It's about, like, making time for each other and yourself. Like, something me and Brendan do is we try and once a week to have a date night. So it'll be like just going somewhere, we'll go out for dinner, have a bottle of wine, and then that's where we'll also talk about a lot of, like, our planning and stuff and getting on top, like, or even maybe topics that might be a bit more niggly, like, why did you spend X amount on this or that, or, oh shit, we're making a loss this month, that kind of stuff. Like, it's a lot easier to have those conversations when you're in a neutral environment and you're both got a bit of a better mindset rather than just screaming across each other at the kitchen table or something like that while you're trying to get the kids dressed. Making sure, yeah, you still make time for each other, and especially if you're working together in the business, that's been massive for us, like doing that kind of date night kind of thing, or even, yeah, night away together and stuff like that. We try and do that once a month where we'll have, because Brendan just doesn't switch off at home, and I think a lot of farmers are like that. Like, there's no point in us having a day off at the house because Brendan's not going to be at the house. He'll be on the farm somewhere. So we'll go spend a night somewhere else. And then that's pretty much the only way that he'll actually not go to the farm or can switch off as well. So yeah, just looking at different ways that you can do things because the traditional way might not work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's fantastic advice and definitely well-rounded, and that will fit in a lot of different areas and on a lot of different farms as well, no matter what the enterprise is. So thank you so much, Nicole, for joining us today here on the farm. I will add the Berry Dairy and any other links that we've spoken about in today's interview to the show notes. So thank you so much.